Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and thanks for joining us on this, the RTC Weekly Download, your place to find your old-time radio connection. Every week we have something different for you to listen to, and this week is no exception. In fact, we have four items in the bin to play for you today. We're going to do some afternoon radio. We're going to jump around a little bit. We're going to have some kids stuff. We're going to have some soap opera and some comedy stuff as well. So we'll start off with Lum and Abner. In this episode, Abner and Grandpa are trying to scare the prince away. That'll be followed by Vic and Sade, and Vic fakes playing the cornet. We'll have an episode of Dick Tracy and Pat Goes Overboard, and finally we'll wrap it all up with a soap opera, because that's the right thing to do, I think. The Life of Mary Southern, and this is the final episode in the series. Well, let's get the whole thing going, and I hope you enjoy it.
My granny's, Abner, I believe that's our ring.
I dog is Lum, I believe you're right.
I'll see. Hello, jot 'em down, store. This is Lum and Abner.
And now let's see what's going on down in Pine Ridge.
Hi, this is Dick Huddleston. Well, the fake Hindu prince the squire brought to Pine Ridge to pretend to heal Lum's equally fake broke leg made the mistake of accepting an invitation to stay at Abner's house. Abner and Grandpap, unbeknownst to Lum and Squire, were planning to put a test to the Hindu miracle man's supposed powers. Well, let's get over to the Jot'em Down store and listen to Abner and Grandpap discussing that gala affair.
And old Lum don't know the pigeon-toed prince has flew the coop, huh?
No, I hate to think what he's going to do to me when he finds out, too.
Yeah, you sure threw the monkey wrench into the works that time, Abner.
Well, you helped do it, Grandpap. You was over at my place, too, you know, trying to get the prince to stick his feet in them hot coals and all that.
Yeah, but it was mostly your ideas. You was one that got the prince to stay over at your place there.
You was just as anxious as I was to see him eat glass and razor blades and everything. Admit it now, wasn't you?
Well, yeah, I reckon so.
Yes, sir.
He never did do nothing, though. Didn't do one single spavin-legged thing we had fixed up for him.
Not a single one.
Of course, I will say he jumped awful high in the air when he sat on that pincushion you put on his chair.
Yeah, I found you he went 10 foot in the air.
Yeah, that's a pretty good scream he gave, too.
I'll tell you, to be honest, Grandpap, that screaming made me suspicion that he weren't actual a real genuine Hindu miracle man, though. They ain't supposed to feel no pain at all. Leastways, that's what Lum told me the other day.
I kind of think he was a fake myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't even touch that bowl of broke glass you set out for him.
Not even sample it. Just looked scared and started backing away.
Biggest one disappointment I ever had in my whole knock-kneed life.
Me too, me too.
I'll tell you one thing, Abner. If I was you, I'd lawsuit him for ripping up your screen door when he run out of there last night.
Yeah, he went right through that thing. Never stopped once.
Make him pay for it. I'd lawsuit the varmint.
Well, I ought to, I reckon. But I was going to have to get a new screen door for long anyway, so...
What do you need with a screen door?
Keep the flies in the house, natural.
Oh, yeah. But when a feller does damage... Oh, wait a minute now. Didn't he leave his turbine over at your place?
I believe it fell off his head when he jumped off the pin cushion there, yeah.
Well, now, that thing ought to be worth something. It had an emerald or a sapphire or some pigeon-toed kind of a jewel on the front of it there.
Well, Grandpa...
Big as a soda biscuit.
I wouldn't want to keep a man's hat. That belongs to him. Besides, it ain't worth nothing. That jewel's just a hunk of glass.
Glass? Is that all it was?
That's all.
Oh, for pity's sakes, I thought that was worth $1 million or $1,000.
No, wasn't even a good grade of glass as far as I could see. Looked like an insulator off a telephone pole.
Yeah, it did, sort of.
Sure.
You know, he strikes me as being an awful poor excuse of a Hindu prince, Abner. Real second rater, if you want my opinions.
Well, I ain't sure he is a Hindu prince. Inside that turbine is a label that says that it come from Felknap's costume shop in Kansas City.
Kansas City?
Yeah. Now, you know a real genuine imitation Hindu prince ain't going clean to Kansas City to get a hat.
Why, of course not.
He's going to buy his hat right there in Hindu.
Natural. I'll tell you, I never trusted that varmint the minute I laid eyes on him. Saw right away he was a fakeroo.
Well, how come you bowing and scraping over at my place, then? Dogus, I thought you'd gonna shine his shoes for him.
I never done no such
you
a thing.
You done it, too.
Well, I was just trying to egg him on, was all. Setting a trap for him, that's what I was doing.
Oh, sure.
I was.
Prattle, prattle.
Don't prattle, prattle me, you little varmint.
Grandpap, now, don't start a fight. I got enough to worry about. The old lum, when he finds out what we did, he's gonna skin me alive just sure as a world.
Excuse me, Abner, I never meant to drap and spill my temper.
Just calm down now. Sit there.
Well, you done him a good turn, looks to me like.
Good turn? How's Lum going to get his broke leg healed up now? Dogus, him and Squire made all arrangements to put on a demon straight over at the lodge hall today. Got the chairs all set up and I don't know what all.
Yeah, I know. But if you want my honest opinion, I don't believe that prince could heal Lum's leg no ways.
Well, he don't actually have to. Lum's leg ain't sure enough broke.
What's that?
Oh, I wasn't supposed to tell you that.
His leg ain't broke, you say?
No. Well, I might as well tell you. He just used that as an excuse to get out of a date with Sister Simpson. And everybody started being so nice to him that he didn't have enough nerve to tell him it weren't true.
Well, if that don't beat the bugs a fight.
Don't you tell him I told you
if
now.
If that don't take the rag off in the bread.
Now, don't tell him, Grandpa.
I'll be a pigeon-toed son of a spavin-legged monkey's knock-kneed uncle.
Oh, wait a minute. Look out there, Grandpa. There comes Squire Skimp. I better hide.
Hide? What for?
Why, he'll skin me alive. The prince is his friend.
Does he know he's gone?
Oh, he's bound to by this time. More likely called over there this morning to see how the prince is getting along. Hey, I'm going to duck behind the counter here, and don't you let him know where I'm at now.
Well, now, wait a minute, Abner. Hey, Abner. Oh, Grandpapa, where's Abner?
Where's Abner, you say?
Yeah, so where is he? Where is your little cuss at?
Abner, you mean?
Yeah, it's Abner.
Abner who?
Abner Peabody. What's the matter with you anyway, Grandpap? Is he out making the deliveries?
Is who out making the deliveries?
Abner.
Oh, him. What did you want to see him about, Squire?
Grandpap, did you know what that little varmint did? He ran Prince Ali Cush out of town.
Oh, he never.
He did it, scared the daylights out of him. Just wait till I get my hands on that Abner.
How do you know he done all that, Squire?
Why, the prince told me. He phoned me from Joplin, Missouri about a half hour ago. He said that Abner and some other old goat, I don't know who that was.
Yeah, I reckon who that could have been.
Well, he said those two fiends submitted him to an evening of the worst torture you could imagine. Worse than the old Spanish Inquisition. Said he was lucky to get out of there with his life.
Well, I do know.
You know anything about this, Grandpap?
Anything about what?
What I've just been telling you.
Oh, that.
Great balls of fire, Grandpap. Can't you understand anything?
Well, you're raving and ranting so hard there, fussing and fuming, it's hard to follow what you're saying.
All right, I'll slow down. Just tell me this. Do you know where he's at?
Where who's at?
Abner.
Oh, Abner who?
Dadgummit, Grandpap, you're driving me to distraction. Is Abner out making the deliveries? Abner Peabody, that is.
Well, now, he generally does make them just about this time every day.
Well, I'll find him. If he comes back here, why, don't let him get away.
Yeah, all right, Squire. All right, Abner, you can come out now. He's gone.
Doggy's Grandpap, you done good. You sure saved my life. If I can ever do you a favor, just let me know, buddy boy.
Well, I'll tell you, buddy boy, there's one favor you can do right now.
Good. What is it?
Just don't tell Squire who that other old goat was that helped you run the prince out of town.
Well, if you stay here and warn me every time Squire comes back so as I can hide again.
Well, Abner, I can't sit here all day and... Uh-oh, look who's coming up out there now.
Oh, my goodness, Squire?
No, it's just as bad, though. It's Lum.
Oh, me, I better hide again.
Yeah, it's too late. Too late, Abner. Besides, you got to face him sooner or later anyway. You better just confess.
Yeah, I reckon so. Oh, I dread this. Morning, Lum.
Yeah. Morning, Abner. Oh, howdy, Grandpap. How are you?
Oh, just only tolerably, Lum.
Nice day, ain't it, Lum?
Well, I never paid no particular attention where it was or not.
Dogus, you don't look like you feel very good.
Oh, I don't, Abner, I don't.
Oh, well, here, let me help you with the rocker. That's it now, just take it easy, old boy. Grandpap, take his crutches for him there.
Yeah, you betcha.
Easy here, now, Lum, now, just sit down. Want me to get you a pillar to sit on? How about a dip of water? Are you warm enough? Are you comfort?
Well, for goodness sake, stop hovering over me, Abner.
I just want to be good to you, Lum, because I love and admire you so much.
Wait a minute. Wait just a minute.
Huh?
What are you putting on this big act for? What have you did wrong now, Abner?
Huh?
Come on, tell me, what have you did?
Why, I ain't did nothing. Hardly.
What is it?
Well, Lom, I never meant to do it.
Here we go. Grannies, you'd think I'd had enough troubles for one human being, but no. No, you got a pile of batch more on top of them.
Well, I'm sorry for Lom.
Never slept hardly a wink all night trying to figure what's right and what's wrong, and now come down here. Well, go on, tell me, what'd you do?
Well, actually, we was trying to help you, Lom, sorter. And we was just trying to make him feel at home.
Make who feel at home?
The prince. Prince Ollie Cush. Me and Grandpap was just trying to make him comfort and all, and then...
Oh, you was mixed up in this too, huh, Grandpap?
Sure he was.
It was mostly Abner's idea.
You were studying him up, too. It was your idea to try to get him to swallow that hot poker.
Swallow a hot poker?
For some reason, he never done it, though.
What in the world was you fellers doing now?
Just trying to get him to give us a demonstrate how them Hindus do all that stuff, that's all. Get him to set on spikes and eat razor blades, all that junk.
Oh, for goodness sake.
He wouldn't do a single thing, just kept backing away, eyes bugged out like a tromped-on toad frog. And when Grandpap bring in a scuttle of hot coals for him to stand in, he run out of there screaming something wonderful.
Yeah, run right through the screen door. And I guess he never stopped till he got to Joplin, Missouri.
Yeah, or leastways, that's where he was when he phoned Squire about it.
Oh, then Squire knows this already, huh?
Oh, yeah, he was in here raising a ruckus like you never heard before. But honest, Lom, we never knowed the prince was going to act that way. We never meant to ruin that healing demonstrate today. Honest. Honest.
Abner.
Now, Lom, don't whop me.
Abner, I want to shake your hand.
Please, Lom, I'll make it up to...
I said I want to shake your hand.
Shake my hand. What do you got in there?
You might not know it, but you done me a favor.
I did?
Yes, sir. The reason I never slept last night was because I don't know where I ought to go through with this demonstrate or not.
Uh-huh.
Just seemed like all I was doing was adding another fib onto the one I'd already told that got me into all this. And that just ain't right.
It ain't, huh?
Of course not. If a feller does something wrong, he can't make it right by doing another wrong. He's got to pay for it in some way.
Well, I'll chip in. How much will it cost?
I don't mean pay for it in money. I mean a feller has to... He's got to take the consequences, and that's what I'm going to do.
How?
The only way a man can live with himself, Abner, is to have a clear conscience.
Yes, sir.
So, I, grannies, I'm going to get everybody on the party line and make a public announcement. I'm going to confess the whole dad-blame thing.
Oh, no, 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 Lom, you can't do that. No telling what folks will do to you.
I can't help it. I've got to do this, Abner. Step aside and let me get to that
point. Hey, now, Lom, don't do it.
I've got to, Abner. I've just got to.
Well, sir, it's late afternoon as our scene opens now, and here in the kitchen of the small house halfway up in the next block, we find Mrs. Victor Gook all by herself. She's removing her hat and overcoat because she's just returned from a downtown shopping expedition, and, uh-oh, here's somebody else arriving home, Mr. Rush Gook. Listen.
Why don't you wait for me when I holler?
I wasn't going to stand out in the alley and freeze to death.
I'd have walked home with you.
Oh, walked home with me. From the garbage box to the house, about 10 feet. I'd have to be awful hard up for your company to do that.
It kind of embarrassed me. There I was talking with Leroy Snow. I see my mother up ahead. I holler for her to wait. She spurns me. I wouldn't be surprised if what Leroy got the impression I'm a nincompoop around the place.
You are. When'd you get home from school?
Just now.
Well, didn't you come home and then go away again?
No. After seventh-hour classes, a bunch of us went down to the gym to shoot baskets.
Well, that's funny. The door was unlocked.
You probably forgot to lock it when you left to go downtown.
I did not. I put the key back of the bucket on the wash bench.
Maybe Gov's here.
Vic? No, I don't think so. It's only a few minutes past four, and he said...
Yeah?
There he is, upstairs.
Yes, Abe?
I just hollered to see if you were home, is all.
I'll be down in just a second.
I presume... Hey, what's that stuff?
Where?
Beside the sink.
I don't know.
Looks like clothes.
Well, what's underneath there?
Box, I guess. Looks like a typewriter case.
Don't bother my things beside the sink, kiddo. When do you expect Rush home?
He's home now.
Oh, that's fine. I'm liable to need them.
There's an instrument case, Mom.
Doctors?
No, musicians. This box has probably got an oboe in it or a
Miss
flute.
Miss Applerot phoned a few minutes ago.
Did she? What'd she want?
I never said. She's going to call again around supper time. Oh, here you are, Sam.
Hello.
Hello. Stick close to the premises unless you have other arrangements. Chances are I'll want you to run an errand.
What's that box thing beside the sink?
You'd never guess in the wide, wide world. Kiddo.
Uh-huh.
What you going to do this evening?
Nothing that I know of. Why?
What you going to do this evening, George?
I have to usher for the band concert in the high school auditorium.
That right?
Me and seven other guys got the job ushering.
Well, look. When you're doing your ushering, just cast your eyes up on the stage and take a glance at the brass section.
Why?
You'll see your father sitting there playing the cornet.
Oh.
There's my cornet. There's my band uniform.
What you talking about? I think your father's got some loose bananas in the beans.
Sounds like it.
I'm not fooling you one bit, kiddo. I'm playing first cornet of the band tonight. I trust you'll be there to applaud. Rush, will you open yonder instrument case and extract there from my trusty horn?
Sure.
Also, fetch the uniform that's there on top and lay it on the table.
Okay.
Whose stuff is that?
The cornet and the band uniform are both the property of L.W. Sloan.
What you doing with them?
This evening at the high school, I'm going to wear the uniform and blow the horn. I'd advise you to get a snappy front seat. Adolf, usher your mother to a choice location tonight.
This looks like a high-class cornet.
It is. Cost L.W. Sloan $100. Be careful you don't drop it or tarnish it. No, kiddo, here's the way it is. L.W. Sloan's sick and can't be in the concert. Ed Weeney, he's the leader, you know, phoned me up at the office this afternoon and asked if I'd take Sloan's place. There ain't any too many guys in the band, see, and he wants the outfit to look as big as it possibly can. So I dropped by Sloan's house and picked up the uniform and the cornet. He and I are about the same size. That's why I was asked.
But you can't play any cornet.
I know it.
Well, then what's the idea?
I'm just going to pretend to play it. Hold it up to my mouth and work the plungers up and down. There won't be anybody know the difference.
How crazy.
No. I'm doing the band boys a good turn. See, they want to put up as good an appearance as they possibly can. They want every chair filled and every instrument used. I told Ed Weeney I'd be glad to help out. The band is a community project, and as a good citizen, I can do no less than... Hand it here one side.
Sure is shiny and nice.
You betcha.
What tunes are you going to play?
My music's there in the case. Get it, will you?
Well, you've never even tooted a horn before, have you?
Uh-uh. Don't even know how.
And you're going to sit up there on the stage in front of everybody with that gold-braided suit on and act like you're tooting?
Sure.
Ridiculous.
No, it's not.
You'll throw the other fellas off their music.
I'm not going to really blow this, you understand? There won't be a sound out of me. All I'll do is puff out my cheeks and work these button things up and down.
Here's your band pieces, guy.
Oh, thanks. See what we're going to play, kiddo?
Mm-hmm.
These are my cornet parts. I play these notes written along this page. What's this first note, you know, Rush?
B flat, I guess. Not sure.
B flat, C safe. I start out with B flat. What's B flat sound like, son?
Oh, B. Play it on your horn once.
I can't.
You're some cornet player.
The people that patronize the high school auditorium tonight will think I'm as good enough cornet player. They'll see me getting red in the face from blowing and my fingers pumping these do-funnies up and down like a house of fire.
What if the audience hollers for a solo?
In that case, I'll probably be exposed and get tired and feathered and run out of town. Look at the selections we're going to render, kiddo. The Green Dragon March, Hunkelman Academy Salute, Three Little Girls Tripping to School, Bright Birds in the Forest, Rhapsody in F Sharp Major, Clark Street Stump, whole smear of high-class tunes. Rush, how's this number start out?
I haven't had to read any music since I left Edward's school, girl. Forgot all I ever knew about it.
Well, you can figure out the notes, can't you?
Well, this first one's A, I think.
Well, how's she sound?
A.
Well, what's the next one?
C.
Let's hear it.
C.
Wonder how you make it go on this horn. Maybe if I fiddle around it a little, I could... I bet the middle do jigger make C.
You don't expect to learn to play your cornet by tonight, do you?
No, but I might pick up a few tricks.
Oh, Vic, I don't like this at all.
Why?
Oh, you making a spectacle of yourself.
I'm not going to make any spectacle of myself.
Sitting in the band all dressed up in gold braid, pretending you're playing music.
Well, the audience won't know I'm pretending.
Friend Ruthie are going to this concert tonight. And Miss Apparat, and Miss Brighton, everybody.
So what?
Well, they know you can't play a horn.
I repeat, so what?
They'll think they're seeing nightmares. Mr. Gook that can't carry a tune in a bushel basket out of a clear sky playing in the band.
Once again, I ask, so what?
Well, I'll feel like a fool.
Why?
People will stare at me.
Oh, won't everybody bombard me with questions while I'm ushering? I never knew your father played the cornet. How long has he been in the band?
They'll ask me that, too.
That's okay. Let them ask.
Well, what'll I tell them? That my husband's just making out like he's tooting?
Anybody gets vulgarly curious, change the subject. Say, wasn't that last selection peachy, Miss Applewright? Band music goes right down to my toes, Mr. Larts.
It's crazy, Vic.
No, now listen. They need somebody to help fill up the stage and give the band a bigger look. I'm being a nice fella to help them out. Because I kind of like the idea of wearing a uniform.
You'll make yourself ridiculous.
How?
Oh, just well.
On the contrary, I expect to cut quite a fancy figure. I'll sit upright in my chair, study my music with a strong, manly eye.
Oh, your music.
Sure, my music.
Besides, it's dishonest.
What is?
Setting on like you're playing pieces on a horn when really you're not making a sound.
Oh, shucks.
Why, Ruthie and them will faint.
Fine.
If you're determined to do this, why don't you just lay the cornet in your lap?
While the other guys are playing, you mean?
Yes.
Well, wouldn't I be a hot-looking musician?
Be better than cheating.
Oh, cheating.
It's nothing but cheating.
Oh, forget it, kiddo. I probably won't be arrested for this cheating I'm going to do. What's that selection you got there, Rush?
The Dance of the Primroses.
I believe that's along about the middle of the program. Very pretty piece. See, say, all the notes I play?
You don't know them notes from beans.
Perhaps not, but those who come to hear the band concert will think I'm throwing in frills by the dozen. Ed Weeney's going to show me how to hold the cornet tonight and give me tips about pushing down the valves and all that. Occasionally, I'll lean over and study my music real hard, like I'm not sure whether the next note's a flat or a sharp. Ka-chan?
Oh, my.
Bill, what's this first one?
I call it D.
How's she go?
D.
D.
A little higher. D.
D?
Yeah.
See, kiddo? It's not hard to play the cornet.
Which concludes another brief interlude, The Small House, halfway up in the next block.
And now, Dick Tracy! This is Dick Tracy on the case of the big black box. Stand by for action. Let's go, men. Yes, it's Dick Tracy, protector of law and order. Today is the anniversary of an event that took place in the life of Andrew Jackson, whose father died before Andrew was born. When Jackson was still a small boy, his mother died, and to top off his misfortunes, his two brothers were killed in war. And yet, this man, who started life alone in the world, became later the seventh president of the United States. The event that meant so much to Jackson's career was a battle fought after the end of a war. The War of 1812. In those days, there was no fast means of communication, no telephone, telegraph, or radio, of course. So people in America didn't know that peace had been signed in Europe until long afterward. But about the time of the signing of the treaty, 7,000 British soldiers landed near New Orleans, and General Jackson, known as Old Hickory, attacked them but was driven back. He had his men set up fortifications. On January 8, 1814, 134 years ago today, the British assaulted the American position, but within a half hour, they lost 2,000 men and were thrown back. This amazing victory made Andrew Jackson a national hero, and it laid the foundation for political strength, which later made Jackson president. And now, Dick Tracy. Yesterday, Dick Tracy and Pat Patton, under the assumed names of Dick Tracer and Pat Paragon, began in earnest their investigation of Oompa Papa's activities. With an armed guard outside their door, they chose the window as a means of exit. Using bed sheets for ropes, they entered a room some 30 feet below, which turned out to be Oompa Papa's study. And as yesterday's episode ended, they could hear ominous footsteps slowly approaching the tapestry-laden room.
Are you set behind the desk, Pat?
Yeah.
If he comes in, make a disturbance to attract his attention, but don't be seen. I'll nail him from behind the door.
Roger.
What art thou that you surfaced this time of day, together with that fair and warlike form?
Hey, you get off
the majesty of...
Hey, shut up, Pat.
Hey, wasn't that magnificent, Dick? And all in one breath, too.
I didn't know you were a Shakespearean scholar, Pat.
Oh, I'm real deep, kid, real deep. Say, you certainly cooled this character, whoever he is. Did you hurt your hand?
Nope. We've got to move fast now, Pat. This fellow ought to be out for a couple of minutes. Mm. We've got to go through this desk.
Well, you take the desk, Dick, while I give Cutie Pie here a quick frisk.
Okay.
An automatic. Shall we keep saying?
By all means.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Find anything in that desk, Dick?
No. Umpire Papa seems to be a cagey boy. He doesn't leave things lying around.
Well, we've done well enough to get the newspaper telling us about their attempt to murder John Harris.
Now all we have to do is to find out who in this macabre household is responsible.
Oh, I'll have the data for you in no time. Hey, he's coming around.
No, Pat.
Shall I sap him again, do you think?
No, it might cause a serious injury. We don't want to be responsible for that.
Yeah, but he's a thug.
And he'll be arrested with the rest of this gang when we get the evidence we need.
I'd better tie him up, huh?
No good, Pat. I don't want him to see us. For us to get anywhere at all, we've got to hope that Oompa Papa doesn't learn that we got out of our rooms.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I'll just take this newspaper along.
Right.
I want to read the Harris story right through. Let's go, Pat. Lights out. And we'll close the door.
Shall I recite some more Shakespeare?
Get moving, you lug.
Where to now?
Back to the room that we broke into. Or should I say that you broke into. Then we shinny up the sheet and we're there.
You make it sound so simple. Why don't we forget about that sheet and the 1,000-foot drop under it and go in the front way? We could slug the guard at our door and walk in like we own the joint.
Yeah, with half a dozen Tommy gun slugs in us. And Oompa Papa finding out just what we've been up to.
Hmm.
Now we turn down this corridor.
Ah, you're a great man. How you can remember anything about this crazy house beats me.
Oompa Papa, impatient when Mike didn't return with his newspaper, is now on his way with the bodyguard Rusty Blade to the study that Dick and Pat have just vacated.
Apparently, I am about to witness the complete disintegration of my entire empire. I suppose I have no one but myself to blame. If I insist upon surrounding myself with submorons, I should expect them to bungle even the simplest tasks.
Oh, hey, Oompa Papa. I try to do my best for you.
That only makes the results more pitiful. I send you out with explicit instructions to kill a man. Not only do you do everything backwards, but the man is still alive.
Yeah. But not very much alive with 3 slugs in his back.
I do not recognize degrees of inefficiency. Either a job is done or it isn't.
Yeah, but...
And just a little while ago, I sent Mike to bring me that newspaper in which your blunder was so thoroughly written up. And he doesn't return. One would think that a little thing like carrying a newspaper wouldn't overtax his brain.
Well, maybe he stopped to read it.
Let us confine our speculating to the realms of possibility.
Yeah, leave us do that.
Here we are, my study. You will go in first.
Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, Oompa Papa. The lights is out.
Well, switch them on, you blockhead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. Hey, did you hear that?
Of course I heard it. Will you turn on the lights?
Yeah. Hey, it's Mike. He's laying on the floor. Hey, come on, get up, Mike. You don't look dignified.
Slap his face and wrists. Bring him around.
Yeah. Mike, I want you to know that I'm doing this in just the spirit of friendship.
More.
No. Okay. You can stop the massage.
Yeah. How do you feel?
Well, like somebody dropped a safe on me.
For heaven's sake, what happened?
I don't know. I come walking in here to get the paper you sent me for. My heart was light and gay. I was whistling a happy tune. My spirits felt
for what? Dear great Caesar's sake, will you stop that drivel? I don't care about your heart, spirits, liver, or anything else. What happened to you?
I'm telling you, Oompa Papa. I walked into the study. I turned on a light.
Yeah?
And I heard a verse.
Oh, like Joan of Arc, huh?
Are you? Someday, I am going to do myself the great good favor of choking you to death while a chorus of 1,000 mixed voices sings Happy Days Are Here Again. Go on, Mike.
That's all. I heard a voice, and the next thing I know, this here rapist slapping me around.
Any bumps on your head?
I don't feel nothing. I must have got a rabbit punch from somebody standing behind the door.
You didn't see anybody?
No.
I hope you two gentlemen don't have a tangle with anyone really tough, like Margaret O'Brien, for instance. Who's guarding the gate?
Red.
Hello, Red. Has anyone been in or out of the gate today? No one. Well, keep alert. If you see anyone but me, Harry, Rusty Blade, or Mike, shoot them. Sir. But did you pick up the paper, Mike?
I never got that far.
I left it right here on the desk. It's gone.
Aye. Maybe we got spooks.
You men are armed, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Sure. Right here's my... Uh-oh.
What is it now?
My gun's been swiped.
Huh? My only comment is that I hope whoever has it does me the extreme kindness of shooting you with it. Oh. Get your gun out and search the house, Rusty. I'm going upstairs to talk to Tracer and Paragon.
Oh, they couldn't have done it. Harry's been guarding them with a Tommy gun.
From now on, I forbid you to have an opinion about anything.
You want to go up the sheet first, or shall I, Dick?
I'll go, Pat.
When you get to our window, swing the sheet back to me.
Anything to keep you happy, son. All right, here goes. Oh, boy, this is slippery. Have to be careful. I guess I can
make it. Okay, Dick?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay, but when you come, watch the grip. It's slippery wet.
All right.
Okay, Pat. I'll swing the sheet over to you. Ready? Right. Here she comes.
I got it. That's it. All right, now. I'm coming.
All right. Hurry it up, Pat.
Oh, you're right. It sure is slippery, all right. Almost there now. Who's that?
Oh, great. That was the sacred nine knocks of Oompa Papa. Get in here quick, yeah, Pat. Shut the window.
Think fast, Dick. We can't let him see us soaking wet.
No, I'll strip and put my robe on.
Uh-huh.
Would you mind coming back?
It is I, Oompa Papa the Great. I would talk with you.
Just a minute, Oompa Papa. Pat, get in there and turn the shower on.
Okay.
Come in, Oompa Papa.
Well, thank you very much. You're dripping wet.
Well, that's why I asked you to wait. I was in the shower when you knocked. I had to get my robe.
Why so out of breath?
Well, I was doing my setting up exercises.
Oh, yes, of course. I see you. You were doing what?
Oh, there's Pat taking his shower.
Why, trust that he doesn't do setting up exercises, too.
Oh, no. He's in too weak a condition for that.
Yes, well, tomorrow he will be strong, for I shall place him in my electronic dynaminator. And I believe...
I gotta see you, Papa.
I have told you never to interrupt me.
Yeah, but look, this ain't gonna wait. Now, look, just for this once, take my word and come with me.
Come. I shall return, Mr. Tracer, when I see what this... Turn the lights on. Who left the window open?
Yeah. It's been busted open.
Hmm?
That's what I wanted you to see.
Hmm. But there's a 1,000-foot sheer drop from here. Don't tell me someone broke in here from a helicopter.
Yep. That lighted window up there. That's where your two suckers are locked in.
But a very acrobatic man could tie a rope from that window up there and swing through this window here.
Believe it or not, that's what I figured, too. Hey, maybe them guys ain't the suckers you think they are. Maybe, huh?
Yes. I am suddenly thinking along those lines.
Yeah? What do you got?
Tomorrow, when I put Pat Paragon in the electronic dynaminator for his health cure, instead of a little harmless electricity, I'll hitch it up to the amplifier and give him a couple of 1,000 volts.
Ooh, fry him, huh?
On both sides.
In a moment, we'll return to Dick Tracy. But first... For something entertainingly different in radio listening, don't miss Candid Microphone.
Here's a Thursday night show that brings you the conversations of everyday people, people in every profession and every walk of life. You see, a man with a secret mic makes the round of the town, listening in to people at work and at play, and he records what they say. Of course, no recording is broadcast without permission of the person whose voice is recorded. For example, Candid Microphone, which uses no scripts or actors, might bring you the conversation of a police officer and a man who's just been given a ticket for overparking. Or it might bring you a glimpse of children at play in the park, or two people meeting accidentally on the street. You'll hear their honest reactions to many situations and to the questions the man with the secret mic puts to them. You'll learn their hopes, their fears, the courage with which people face life and the happiness and sorrow they bear. Don't forget, Tracy fans, plan to join us for this entertaining program, Candid Microphone, when it speaks out tonight and every Thursday night over most of these same ABC stations. And now, back to Dick Tracy.
You keep dragging me around in the rain, Dick, and I'll have galloping something or other.
Never mind. Oompa Papa will fix you up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to sitting in that electronic dynaminator tomorrow.
I wouldn't if I were you, Pat. Better be sure to tune in tomorrow for The Adventures of Dick Tracy. This is George Gunn speaking. Every Saturday afternoon, it's high C time on the American Broadcasting Company. Yes, the Metropolitan Opera broadcasts Saturday afternoons over most of these ABC stations. And that means, from the operatic stage of New York's famous Metropolitan Opera House, you enjoy celebrated artists singing in the great musical tradition of grand opera. Stars like Lily Pons, Helen Traubel, Lauritz Melchior, Ezio Pinza, Robert Merrill, and Licia Albanese. Every week, of course, Milton Cross is on hand to introduce each act of the opera being performed. And so, for an afternoon's musical enjoyment, don't miss the Metropolitan Opera on the air tomorrow afternoon, or Saturday afternoon over most of these same ABC stations. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The Life of Mary Southern, the human dramatic story of a young woman who, in an unsettled, changing world, seeks peace, contentment, and security for herself and for those near and dear to her. And now, The Life of Mary Southern. Steve Conrad, forcing Fran to admit her feelings for John Benson, has told her he will not give her up, but he will, in fact, go to John Benson himself as soon as he returns to the city. As Steve and Fran argued the question of Dr. John Benson and his place in their lives, as Steve told the apprehensive girl he would reveal the entire story of their relationship to the doctor she idolizes, we heard...
Steve, you'll turn him against me so that I can't
never... That's just what I'm gonna do. Unless you want to change your mind and start acting like you got some sense. Forget all those fancy ideas, friend. Be like you used to be. Come back to me.
Not in a million years, Steve.
I'd think it over if I was you. While there's still time.
Now it is a few minutes later. As the girl and the man she hates drive back to town, it is a Fran who is fighting back a mounting terror, fighting back the tears which flood her eyes, who looks unseeing at the road stretching out before them. Steve, certain he has gained his objective, smiles to himself as he guides his truck over the concrete highway. Neither he nor Fran have spoken for several minutes. It is Steve who breaks the silence.
Got your answer ready, Fran? Oh, not speaking, eh?
I got nothing to say.
When does the doc get back to town?
I don't know.
He ain't been in touch with you, huh? Well, I think I got a load to take to Santa's tomorrow the next day. Maybe I won't wait till he comes here to see him.
Steve, you gotta give me time to decide.
You don't need time.
I do.
Forget it. I know what your answer's gonna be. I'm planning to see the doc in Sanders.
Stop at this corner, will you?
You ain't home yet, baby.
I said stop at this corner. What do you want me to jump?
Okay. Now, wait a minute, friend.
Let me out.
There's no reason for you to act this way just
Let
because
me out,
I
tell you.
All right. Go ahead and walk home. The air'll do you good. But don't forget I'm going to Santa's and see the doc. Unless you change your mind.
County will, too. Why'd I ever get mixed up with that guy? Why didn't I have the sense then I got now? He'll see the doc. Tell him everything. And if the doc knows, the Southern will know. Mr. Drake. Then I'll always be just a tramp. I won't let Steve do it. I can't let him do it. He's got to give me a chance. Oh, what's the use? He won't. I know he won't. He's mean clear through. So mean he don't even understand how I feel about Doc Benson. He don't understand nothing except the kind of a life he's living. That kind of life. Well, I ain't going back. Nothing will ever make me go back. Not even Steve, or his threats, or his telling. Oh, but he can't do that. I gotta find a way to stop him. I gotta find a way to stop him. I gotta find a way. Oh, Tommy. Tommy.
Fran. Hey, sis.
Oh, Tommy, I...
Oh, gee, Fran, the love of Pete, what's the matter? What happened? Jesus, look, don't do that. Don't cry, please.
I'm sorry, Tommy.
Here. Take this.
Oh, I'm such a fool.
Here.
He ain't worth crying about. He ain't worth a plug nickel. I should cry for what he's done. That's a laugh. That's a swell laugh. Look, Tommy, if I was to come to you and say, Tommy, I'd say, I was out for a ride with Steve tonight, see, and we ran over a girl and we broke her heart.
Hey, Fran.
We didn't, but just supposing, see, suppose, and if I said that we broke her heart and Steve laughed and said we didn't, who would you believe? Who would you believe, huh?
Why, you, of course, Fran.
Oh, sure. Sure you would. And so would anyone else. But Tommy.
Yeah?
Tommy, if you was Doc Benson and Steve come to you and he said... Supposing he said, Doc, this here... Oh, but he wouldn't. He can't. It'll never happen. It just can't.
You're acting kind of funny tonight, sis. You're talking wild, crazy-like. Maybe you shouldn't have gone out so quick. He ain't well yet, you know?
No, I'm okay. Don't you worry.
You sure don't sound it. Look. Hadn't you better go to bed? Take a good sleep. I'll heat up some milk for you.
Tommy, how long you been home?
About half an hour.
Have you seen Miss Southern?
No.
Mr. Drake?
No, Fran.
Oh, Steve said he told them they wasn't ever trying to see us again. Maybe they believed what he told them. Maybe I ain't never going to see him again. Oh, Tommy, I...
What are you talking about,
Oh, Fran? I've been telling you Steve was a bum guy. Now maybe you'll believe me. You know what he'd done? He told them never to come see me again. He told him that they was wrecking my life. That's a laugh. Isn't that a laugh, Tommy?
Now, look, Fran, pull yourself.
I know you think I'm talking crazy, but it's the gospel truth, Tommy, every word of it. Maybe that's why Miss Southern ain't here to see me. Maybe that's why I... Oh, Tommy. Tommy, if I couldn't never see them people again, if Doc Benson thought that I... Oh, I can't let him. I can't. I won't.
What are you getting out of the drawer?
Just some money. A little dough.
There ain't much left, Fran.
It's enough.
What are you doing, Fran? Where are you going?
I don't know exactly.
But I ain't gonna let you go out like
this. It's okay, Tommy. Honest, it's okay. Don't worry about me. I'm gonna be all right.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Barker.
Yep.
Mr. Barker, this is Fran Garfield.
Well, how are you, Fran? I'm sure glad...
Is Miss Southern there?
Well, I'm right sorry to tell you, Fran, that Miss Southern left quite a while ago with...
Hello?
Oh, Mrs. McPherson?
Yes?
This is Fran Garfield. I'm a friend of Miss Southern's.
Oh, yes, of course, Fran. I really feel
she,
as
she
I...
She ain't there, is she?
Well, no. She and Mr. Drake went to the picture show. I thought I heard them say...
Oh, then neither of them's home, huh?
Well, no, Fran, but I was going to tell you I thought...
Okay, Mrs. McPherson, thanks.
Fran Garfield, believing herself alone in her trouble, having come to feel in her frightened, almost hysterical condition that Mary has indeed deserted her, does not know that Mary tried earlier this evening to see her. Her ride with Steve has driven all thoughts from her mind save one. That Steve is going to see John Benson, But by seeing him, her friendship with the doctor who was moving to Craig's Falls will be a thing of the past, and that her newfound friends will all desert her. She walks slowly down the main street of Craig's Falls, looking neither right nor left. The events of the last few weeks crowd through her troubled mind. As she walks, seemingly without direction, she seems to hear,
"I bet if he hadn't took the bar away from me, I could have broke it right in two. That just goes to show what a fella can do once he sets his mind on something. If someone shoves him around too much. Fran remembers that. She ain't never forgot it."
"I've come to feel you and Tommy are my friends, that you're among the best friends I have in Craig's Falls. Look at this letter from Dr. Benson. Look.
I trust Fran Garfield is making a speedy recovery. Please give her my warmest regards and tell her I will see her the very day I arrive in Craig's Falls.
I gotta take a load to Sanders tomorrow or the next day. Maybe I won't wait till he comes here to see him. I know what your answer's gonna be. I'm planning to see the doc and Sanders."
"He means what he says. He means what he says."
"Give her my warmest regards."
"Oh, Doc."
"Please don't worry, Fran. You've got to promise me one thing. You mustn't worry. Everything's going to be all right."
"Doc. Dear Doc Benson."
"Tell her I'll see her the very day I arrive in Craig's Falls."
"Oh, but that's going to be too late. Steve's going to Sanders tomorrow."
"Mister, hey, mister, look here. Give me a ticket. Yeah, a one-way ticket to Sanders."
Fran Garfield, desperate, terrified, fearful of losing the only thing in life she cares for, has rushed to the side of John Benson, who is completely unaware of the crisis in the life of the girl he regards as only a patient.
Mary and David do not realize that Steve has decided who is taking Fran from him, or what he intends to do about their continued relations. Will Steve decide to forget all about it, as David suggests? Or will the days to come bring complications in the lives of these people we have come to know so well? If we could brush away the mist that hides the future and see what's in store for Mary Southern and those who make up her circle of friends and acquaintances, would we find happiness or sorrow? What will happen next is in the hands of fate. With this air of uncertainty, we reluctantly come to the end of this series of programs in the life of Mary Southern. We sincerely hope you've enjoyed the time you've spent in listening, and we trust you'll be at your radios in the near future when we resume our story. And so, we bid you goodbye for now, till we meet again in the life of Mary Southern.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.